You are listening to WMFO, 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform Radio in Medford, Massachusetts. The name of this show is Licorice Pizza.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. This is your host of the Inner Sanctum, inviting you in through the creaking door. Come on in and enter into the spirit of things. don't pay any attention to those gurgling sounds you hear. They're the unfortunate ones, the midnight spirits who were caught haunting before midnight. Poor things. All they can do now is gurgle, because they've evaporated into distilled spirits.
Oh, what a horrifying thought, Mr. Host. Can't we ever talk about the brighter side of life?
Well, don't forget, Mary, murder is my business.
Well, thank goodness it isn't mine. And right now, I'd much prefer to talk with our Lipton listeners about something more conducive to happy spirits. I mean, a cup of hearty, piping hot Lipton tea. You know, it's really wonderful, the extra delight you get from this superb tea, friends. And the reason is simply this. Lipton's grand brisk flavor. Brisk, you know, is the tea expert's own word for the fresh, full-bodied, lively flavor of Lipton tea. Because unlike ordinary teas, Lipton's is never flat-tasting or lifeless. Lipton tea is always spirited, full-flavored, truly satisfying. Why, I'd even go so far as to say that once you've tried it, I think you'll enjoy Lipton tea more than any other tea you've ever tasted.
And I'll go even further, Mary, and introduce our listeners to tonight's story. It's an original radio play written especially for Inner Sanctum by Emil Tepperman and starring Richard Widmark in the role of Alex Gregory. It's about a man who became master of a secret so fearful that it could never be revealed to any mortal, living or dead. But let him tell you the story himself, how he learned the most terrible secret in all the universe, and what he did with it.
It was an evening in September, the 15th to be exact, when I first learned of the existence of Elixir Number 4. It happened at Professor Jarman's house just off the college campus. You've heard of Jarman, of course. He was to chemistry what Einstein is to physics. But it was his daughter, Elaine, that I was interested in that evening in September when I rang their bell.
Oh, hello, Alex. Oh, gosh, is it that late? I'm not even dressed.
Hi, sweet. Snap it up, will you? The last show starts at 8:30.
Oh, it won't take me long. Wait for me in the library. I'll be ready in a jiffy.
I knew my way around the house. I went into the library, and the first thing I noticed was that the door to Professor Jarman's private study was ajar. It had never happened before. The private study and the laboratory beyond were forbidden territory in the Jarman home. Not even Elaine was allowed in there. And now the door was open. I'd heard stories of Jarman's experiments with new and secret formulae. So here was a chance. A possible chance to find out what the old codger was working on. I couldn't resist. I pushed open the door and I stepped into the private study. I could hear Jarman in the lab talking to himself. Elaine had told me once that he always talked to himself in the lab. I stood quietly in the study, but I couldn't make out what he was saying in there. I looked around. The study was just a small cubbyhole with a chair, a bookcase, and a desk. And on the desk, I saw the open diary. A single sentence was written on the open page. I stepped closer. And then I got the first shock. For that sentence was written in Latin. My Latin was rusty, but I was able to decipher the words, Vitae secretum in elixir quartum perpetus habeo. In elixir number 4, I have the secret of perpetus life. Perpetus. That was the one word I couldn't seem to place. In elixir number 4, I have the secret of something. Life. I was puzzling over that word perpetus when suddenly the laboratory door was flung open.
What are you doing at my desk?
Oh, hello, Professor Charman.
I asked you, what are you doing at my desk?
Well, the study door was open. I thought I'd see if you were in here.
You were reading my diary.
Oh, no, Professor.
You saw the entry in my diary.
Well, really, Professor, I assure you.
Do you read Latin?
Latin? Well, I don't understand.
You're sure you don't understand Latin?
No, I don't.
Here I am, Alex. Ready? Well, is anything wrong?
Elaine, I've told you time and again, no one is to be admitted to my study.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dad. You must have left the door open. Oh, Alex, you shouldn't
I'm terribly
come.
Sorry, Elaine. I found the door open and I thought Professor Jarman was in here. I just wanted to say hello.
All right. No harm done as long as you can't read Latin. Now get along, you two. I'm busy, but keep out of my study hereafter.
I took Elaine to the movies, but I haven't the faintest recollection of what the picture was about. Through my mind kept running that Latin sentence. Vitae secretum in elixir quartum perpetus habeo. When I said goodnight to Elaine at her door after the show, I hurried home to my room and I got out an old Latin dictionary. I looked up the word perpetus. And then I got a strange, cold feeling down my spine. For the word perpetus meant perpetual. The Latin sentence which Jarman had written in his diary meant, in elixir number 4, I have the secret of perpetual life. Professor Jarman had discovered the secret of immortality. All the next day, I conducted my chemistry classes purely by instinct. I couldn't take my thoughts from elixir number 4. Every voice in the classroom seemed to sing the same refrain.
Accomplished by adding to a dilute solution of H2SO4 a quantity of
immortality. Never to know the fear of death. To live on serenely. To watch the world change through the centuries. Never to die. It grew on me like a festering tumor, this terrific dream of immortality, everlasting life. I had to have elixir number 4. In the afternoon, the first free period I had, I went down the hall to Jarman's office.
Come in.
May I come in for a moment, Professor?
Oh, it's you. Yes, come in. I haven't much time.
Professor, I want to apologize for last night.
Let's forget about it. No harm done.
Well, whatever it was you had written in your diary, it must have been pretty important.
Oh, no, not at all. Only some chemistry notes. Nothing of any importance. Just something I've been experimenting
with. Well, I'd be very glad to assist you, Professor. Anything I could do,
I'd be very kind of you, young man, but I don't need any assistance, thank you. As a matter of fact, the experiment is completed.
You mean you're all finished?
All but the practical application.
Oh. Well, couldn't I help you on that?
It won't be necessary. Tonight, I'm taking the last step.
Tonight? I knew what that meant. Tonight, he was going to use elixir number 4. He was going to administer it to himself. I had to act tonight or never. Jarman's keys were on his desk. I distracted his attention and I managed to pick them up without his noticing. Then I hurried across town to a locksmith and had him make duplicates of Jarman's house key, his study key, and his laboratory key. Then I returned to the college and I managed to replace the keys on Jarman's desk while he was out. Now, I was ready for an adventure into immortality. At 8:30 that evening, I let myself into Charman's house, opened the study door, and stepped quietly over to the laboratory. I knew Elaine was at a sorority meeting. The professor and I were the only ones in the house. Jarman was standing at the lab table with his back to me, talking away to himself. There was a small vial on the table and a hypodermic syringe alongside it.
The quantity administered yesterday will be sufficient. At my age, since my blood is too thin, I require the additional dose. But a younger man would need only one injection to cause the necessary type change in his blood. Who's that?
Good evening, Professor Jarman. I hope I'm not interrupting.
What are you doing here? How did you get in?
So elixir number 4 changes the bloodstream, hmm?
What do you want in here?
Quit stalling, Professor. I know what elixir number 4 is.
Ah.
So this is it. Elixir number 4.
Careful. Don't spill it.
How much of this stuff have you got?
That's all there is. 5 cc's.
You mean you haven't got any more?
It took me 5 years to distill 10 cc's. Before that, I experimented for 10 years. I failed 3 times.
And this is your 4th try, huh? Elixir number 4. And there isn't any more of it?
It'll take me 5 years more to make up another bat. Please be careful. Don't drop it.
Don't worry, I won't. You said this is enough to make the average man immortal. Me, for instance?
It's not for you. You hear me? Not for you.
Oh, yes, it is, Professor. It's for me.
I won't let you... What are you doing with that mallet?
What do you think?
No.
I'm so sorry, Professor.
Wait. I'll let you have it. Don't kill me.
I've got to kill you. When I take this dose of elixir number 4, I'll be immortal. And I don't want anyone to know it.
Go away, you fool. You'll never enjoy your immortality. You'll wish you were dead 1,000 times. I'll come back to remind you. Back to remind you.
I didn't hit him hard enough to kill him. That wasn't part of my plan. But when he lay unconscious on the floor, I searched among the chemicals until I found what I wanted. I mixed some chemicals in a test tube, and I watched the fumes forming. Then I held the test tube against Jarman's mouth, forcing the deadly gas into his lungs. When I was sure he was dead, I wiped the tube clean of my fingerprints and put it back in the rack. Then I picked up the vial of elixir number 4, the hypodermic syringe, and I hurried away, locking all the doors behind me. As soon as I got home, I filled the hypo with elixir number 4, and I gave myself the injection. Almost immediately, I felt a strange radiance pervading my body. A new strength was flowing in my blood. I was immortal. I couldn't die. I would go on living and living and living forever.
What's going on here? What's all this about living forever? If you ask me, it would be more of a curse than a blessing. Now, just suppose we all took a shot of this elixir number 4. I think of all the people who'd lose their jobs. Grave diggers and stone cutters and shroud makers and hearse drivers and... Oh, why go on? You see what I mean. Why, everybody'd be out of a job. We'd all practically starve to death.
Well, then, Mr. Host, maybe we can be glad that nobody has ever found the fountain of youth. You know, I think it's not a matter of trying to live forever. The important thing is to get more enjoyment out of every day.
Mm-hmm. For instance, Mary?
Well, for instance, one splendid way to get more enjoyment out of an otherwise dull day is to invite your friends in for tea. It's a delightful neighborly custom, made even more delightful when the tea you serve is Lipton's, because there's so much extra pleasure in Lipton tea. The party will seem more of a party. The conversation will be more sparkling, and your reputation as a thoughtful hostess will soar to the skies the moment your guests take their first sip of Lipton tea. For Lipton's wonderful, brisk flavor makes it a favorite with everybody. So when friends drop in for tea, or the family gathers around the dinner table, serve them Lipton's. Tea at its delicious best.
And now let's get back to our story. We're all anxious to see what this fellow Alex does with his secret of perpetual life. Just imagine, a man with all that time on his hands. Time to kill. And kill. And kill.
Immortality. I had it in my blood. I could feel it pulsing in my veins. The vitality, the power. I had to establish an alibi. Not that I expected to need an alibi. Jarman's death would surely look like an accident or suicide when his body was found in the laboratory in the morning. But I wasn't taking any chances on a murder charge. I had so much more to lose now. Wouldn't it be ironic if they were to execute me for murder? Me, an immortal. Next morning, I stopped at Jarman's house and rang the bell. I knew Elaine must have gone right to bed when she returned from the sorority meeting last night, because she never disturbed her father when he was in the lab. But now, when she discovered that he hadn't been to bed all night, she'd want to investigate. And I wanted to be there when the body was found.
Oh, good morning, Alex.
Hello, sweet. What's wrong? You look worried.
Come on in. Alex, I am worried. Dad's still in the lab. He didn't go to bed last night.
Well, what of it? He must be working on something big.
No, I'm afraid something's happened. I knocked at the door just now and there was no answer.
The door was locked?
Yes, but I have a pass key. I wonder if I ought to use it.
Well, of course you should.
Well, please, Alex, you come with me.
Of course, darling. Together we opened the laboratory door. I was all set to act horrified when we discovered the body on the floor. But there was no need to act. I was horrified. For the lab was empty. There was nothing on the floor. The body of Professor Jarman was gone. I don't know for how many hours after that I walked the street, confused and frightened and uncomprehending. I tried to reason it out. How Jarman's body had walked out of that lab. There was only one solution. Jarman had already taken one dose of elixir number 4. It must have counteracted the poison that I'd forced into him. He must have gotten up and then walked away. But where? And why? I recalled what he'd said before I hit him with the mallet. Yes, I could hear his voice faintly strumming at my brain.
You'll never enjoy your immortality. You'll wish you were dead 1,000 times. I'll come back to remind you.
The next day, I went to Elaine's house, and I saw that she was taking her father's disappearance pretty hard.
Oh, Alex, I don't know what to make of it. Do you think that he's...
Now, take it easy, baby. Maybe he's just suffering from amnesia. Maybe he just walked out of the house. He might turn up tomorrow.
I have a terrible feeling, Alex, that he's dead.
What makes you think so?
Oh, I don't know.
Now, please, Elaine, that won't do you any good.
Oh, but it's the uncertainty. If I only knew for sure. Alex.
Hmm?
Do you believe in mediums?
Communicating with the dead?
Do you believe a medium can put you in touch with the dead?
Oh, is that what you're thinking of, darling? Going to a medium?
Don't you see, Alex, if Dad is dead, maybe...
I was worried, too. I had to know if Jarman was dead or alive. I had to know before I could start enjoying life. Yes, that might be a good idea, Elaine. Can't hurt to try. There's a medium in town.
Oh, I don't know what I want to do. Let me think about it.
Well, sure, darling. In the days that followed, I began to doubt whether I really was immortal. Was elixir number 4 really the elixir of life? Was I really going to live forever? If there was only some way to prove it. Then I remembered what Jarman had said, that the elixir caused a change of blood type. Well, that'd be easy enough to check. Elaine was taking a medical course, so I asked her to test my blood on the pretext that I thought I had anemia.
It won't hurt, Alex. Just the needle.
Ouch.
There, now I've got all the blood I need. Just sit here a minute while I make the test.
Well, does it take long?
Only a minute. Alex.
She was excited. There was something different about my blood.
Alex. Alex, come here quick.
What?
Look. Oh, look, Alex. I can't be mistaken. Your blood. It's a new type.
Elaine couldn't get over the discovery that my blood was a new type. I'd asked her not to tell anyone about my new blood type, but I knew she wouldn't be able to keep the secret for long. And once it got out, people might begin to suspect what I already knew for sure, that I was immortal. Oh, I couldn't afford to have that known, because then everybody in the world would be envious of me. They'd hate me, too, because they'd know I could go on living long after they were dead. Oh, no. No, it had to be a secret forever. No one in the whole world must know, except myself. And the only person who could spill the secret now was Elaine. So, there was only one thing to do. Elaine furnished the opportunity herself the next day.
Alex, I've been thinking about that medium. I've got to know if Dad is alive or dead.
All right, whatever you say, darling, if it'll make you feel any better. I'll go with you, of course. Just the two of us, huh? We made a date to go to the seance that evening, and I made my plans accordingly. I didn't intend that Elaine should leave the seance alive. We arrived at the medium's house promptly at 9 o'clock. The medium asked Elaine and me to sit close to each other. And then she put out the lights.
Alex.
It's all right, sweet. I'm right here. I'm right next to you.
I'm frightened.
No, there's nothing to be frightened about, darling. I'm right here with you.
But it's so dark. I can't see anything. I don't hear anything. Where's the medium?
She's still here. She's right across the table. She's gone into her trance.
Do you think she'll contact Dad's spirit?
I don't know, darling. Wait and see. I timed myself carefully, waiting for the moment when the medium should be well into her trance. Then I took out of my pocket the hypodermic syringe. I held the plunger in my left hand while I gripped Elaine's arm with my right. My thumb over the artery.
Alex, my arm, your fingers hurt.
It's all right, sweet. Slowly, I brought the hypodermic needle up close to the artery. One bite of the needle, a single plunge of the plunger, and death would come almost instantaneously. And no one in the world could say that it hadn't been heart failure. But suddenly, just as I had the plunger ready, I heard something strange. A sound. In the room where there should have been no sound.
You'll never enjoy your immortality. You'll wish you were dead 1,000 times. I'll come back to remind you. Back
the dead.
To remind
you. Back the voice of the dead.
You, back to remind you.
Jarman, where are you? Jarman, stop. You're dead. You're dead, Jarman. You can't be talking. You're dead. I saw your dead body. I killed you myself. Suddenly, the lights flashed up. The room was full of police.
Arrest him, officer. He killed my father. You heard his confession.
That voice.
That was Dad's voice, Alex. A recording.
What? A recording?
That's why he always talked to himself in the lab. He had a wire recording machine. He talked while he carried on his experiments so that there'd be a permanent record. The wire recorder picked up everything that was said in the lab the night you killed him. But we could never have proved it was your voice in court if you hadn't confessed just now.
Yes, but the body.
I found Dad dead that night when I got back from the meeting. And I hid the body until I could find his murderer. And now, Alex, I found him.
All through the trial, Elaine sat and watched me. All the time the jury was out, she sat and watched me. And she watched me while they read the verdict of guilty. Her eyes never left me when I stood up to be sentenced and heard the judge say,
Alex Gregory, it is the judgment of this court that you be confined to the penitentiary for the rest of your natural life.
Me of all people. Me sentenced to imprisonment for life. Me in whose veins runs the precious elixir number 4. Imprisonment for the rest of my natural life, which means forever.
You know, I feel kind of sorry for Alex. He really got a tough break. Locked up in a cell for all eternity and no way out. Yes, looks like they'll have to build a new jail around him every 1,000 years or so. Of course, there's one way out for him. He could let his beard grow for a couple of centuries, and when it gets long enough, he could hang himself.
Oh, imagine such a thing, Mr. Host.
Yes, it would be sort of breathtaking, wouldn't it, Mary? Poor Alex. He probably had many good impulses in his lifetime. As the trouble is, he didn't follow them.
Well, Mr. Host, I'm afraid that's something we all do every now and then. For instance, perhaps some of you Inner Sanctum fans have promised yourselves the pleasure of trying Lipton tea, but somehow just haven't gotten around to it. Or maybe you've just forgotten it when you're writing out your grocery list. Well, this time, make sure. Add Lipton tea to your grocery list right now. For until you do try it, you're missing a real treat. Why not start enjoying lively, full-bodied Lipton tea beginning tomorrow?
And now, friends, before I say goodnight, here's a pleasant bit of philosophy. Biologists tell us that all life starts in a little cell. And for convicted murderers, it ends there, too. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Death in the Limelight by A.E. Martin. And next week's Inner Sanctum story, brought to you by the makers of Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup, and directed by Hyman Brown, next week's story is called You'll Never Escape. So, if you feel in a capturing mood, join us next Tuesday. Until then, good night. Pleasant dream?
Friends, you want to know how to make an ordinary meal into a feast? Start it right. Start it bright with tempting, heartwarming Lipton's Noodle Soup. Lipton's Noodle Soup is ready to serve in a jiffy, and what a treat it is. Lots of tender, golden noodles and a world of real chickeny flavor that makes it taste homemade. It's economical, too. Lipton's Noodle Soup mix costs less and makes lots more than canned soups. So try Lipton's Noodle Soup real soon. And don't forget to tune in next week at the same time for another Inner Sanctum mystery.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, that was creepy. That was an episode of an old CBS radio show called Inner Sanctum. The episode's title was The Man Who Couldn't Die, and was originally broadcast on October 30, 1945. I'll play another episode of Inner Sanctum featuring Boris Karloff after this brief public service announcement.
Wearing a mask helps prevent the spread of COVID-19. Wear your mask correctly. Wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds before putting on your mask. Holding the ear loops or ties, make sure the mask covers your nose and mouth and secure it around your chin. Try to fit it snugly against the sides of your face. Make sure you can breathe easily and keep the mask on the entire time you're in public. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/coronavirus.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries, starring Boris Karloff. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host. Welcome again through the squeaking door to another session of mystery, murder, and madness. Oh, excuse me if I don't get up, but I'm all worn out. Yes, I've had a hectic few days with an old friend who just blew into town. He's one of those earnest souls who insists on doing everything for himself. Consultations with the monument makers, the grave diggers, fittings at the coffin maker. Yes, quite a busy body. But then we only die once, you know.
Oh, these friends of yours, they're such unhappy people. They never seem to enjoy life. Never seem interested in any of the quiet, peaceful, good things of life. For instance, what's the use of telling one of your spooky characters about Lipton tea? They wouldn't like it. But other people enjoy that brisk Lipton flavor. They settle back in an easy chair and say to themselves, Lipton certainly has a rich, hearty flavor. Never the least bit wishy-washy. No siree. But would a ghost appreciate Lipton's? Indeed, he would not. And it's lucky Lipton's is made for real, live folks who like good things. Or else it wouldn't be the world's largest selling brand of tea.
Mary, you've been very hard on my friends. Very. And they won't like it. But then most live folks don't enjoy being scared to death. And that's just what's going to happen to you tonight. Our story is called The Corridor of Doom. It's an original radio play written by Robert Newman. And our star tonight is a man who gives even me the shakes. The famous star of stage, screen, and radio, Boris Karloff. Have you thought about death lately? Not the fact that it's inevitable, that it must come to all of us someday, but rather how it will come. Do you think of it as a sleep and a waking, of a sudden transition from one state of being to another, or to a state of non-being? John Clay was one of those people who never thought about it at all, until he found himself walking down that dim and endless passage which... But suppose we let Boris Karloff in the role of John Clay tell you about it himself. If your blood pressure will take it, put out the lights and come on a little trip down the corridor of doom. When I woke up, I had no idea of where I was or how I'd gotten there. I was lying on a hard white bed in a clean white room. There was a dull pain in my abdomen. Touching it tentatively, I felt a bandage. So that was it. An operation. But for what? And where was I? At that moment, the door opened, and she came in. Good afternoon. Or is it evening?
Whichever you prefer. It doesn't matter.
My name's Clay. John Clay.
Yes.
And yours?
You can call me Nada.
Exactly. Where am I? In what hospital?
It has no name.
What? But that's ridiculous. I'd like to speak to Dr. Rogers. If you'll get him for me, please.
There is no Dr. Rogers. At least, not here.
Then who operated on me? And for what? Listen... I'm not a well man. I've a very bad heart. Will you get someone who can talk to me?
If you wish. I'll call Dr. Stone.
A chill crept through my bones. It wasn't cold. It was fear. Unreasoning and abysmal fear. The door opened again, and there stood a heavy-set man, his hair flecked with gray, and with him, my son-in-law, Alex Bartlett. Alec, I can't tell you how glad I am to see you.
Hello, Father.
But why are you standing out there? Why don't you come in?
Oh, no. No,
I shouldn't advise it, Mr. Clay.
And why not? And why... Oh, was it you who operated on me?
Yes. I'm Dr. Stone.
Why wasn't Dr. Rogers called in? He's taken care of me for years.
There wasn't time. It happened during the night. Acute appendicitis. And even as it was...
Even as it was? What? And why are you dressed that way, Alec? All in black?
Well, it's customary. After all, you are my father-in-law.
Of course I am, but... Now, look, Alec. You've got to stop being so mysterious. You know about my heart, what any sudden shock will do.
I don't think you need worry about that anymore, Mr. Clay. And as far as the mystery is concerned, this initial period of adjustment is always a little difficult.
Difficult? Do you realize what it's like, lying here helpless, completely isolated, as if I were all alone in the world? Or isn't there someone I can talk to? Some of the other patients?
Not just yet. When the time comes, you'll meet them.
But, look, Doctor, I can't stand much more of this. I can't. If I don't find someone who really cares about me, who'll treat me like a normal human being... My dog. How about my dog?
What do you think, Doctor?
Yes, that's possible. We'll see what we can do, Mr. Clay. Come along, Bartlett.
Goodbye, Father.
You'll be back, won't you, Alec?
I don't know. I'll try, but it's difficult. Very difficult.
Then don't go, Alec. Don't leave me here all alone. Come back. Come back. I waited and watched. Watched and waited. Then the door opened and there was the doctor again. There was a small, thin-faced man with him this time, wearing the white coat of an orderly and carrying a black box with a handle. My dog! You brought my dog!
All right, Martin. Give it to him.
Yes, sir.
Thank heaven, now at least. Come on, Kerry. Come on, boy. Get up. Wake up. Why, what's the matter? Kerry! He's not asleep. He's dead.
You wanted him, Mr. Clay.
But why didn't you tell me? When did he die? How?
How old was he?
11 and a half. Maybe 12.
Pretty old for a dog. That's probably why he could come.
What do you mean? What are you trying to do to me? Don't you realize I'm a sick man?
Easy, easy, Mr.
Clay. I won't take it easy. I won't stay here another minute. I'm leaving right now.
Sorry, but I don't think we can permit
it. Well, we'll see about that.
You're getting yourself all upset for no reason, Mr. Clay. Making it very difficult for the rest of us. Martin,
yes,
you'd better let me have some of that bottle there. About 10 cc's.
The red medicine?
Yes.
I don't want any medicine. I won't take it.
Now, please, Mr. Clay.
I won't, I tell you. No, I don't want the... It's awful. Salty. It tastes like...
Yes. But I think you'll find that it will make things much easier for you. Very much easier.
You're doping me up. That's what you're doing. Putting me to sleep. You think that when I wake up, I'll forget about everything?
Yes, Mr. Clay. You'll forget about everything. Everything.
I was somewhere deep down under the earth. It was a passageway, stone flagged and with stone walls, and I was walking slowly down it in my bare feet. I could feel the chill of the cold stones through the thick layer of dust. The passageway stretched ahead of me endlessly. And suddenly, I noticed that there were doors set into the walls on either side. Closed doors. And on each door there was a name. Abel. Abercrombie. Abington. Where was I? What was this place? What was behind those awful, ominously closed doors? Something seemed to be drawing me on down the terrible passageway. Addison, Agar, Alan. I could feel the cold creeping up my legs, higher and higher, my heart pounding faster and faster. And suddenly I knew where I was and where I was going. Knew what was waiting for me there ahead of me down the passage. Exerting all my will, I turned, tried to go back. With a roaring in my ears, I was falling through the darkness. Falling. When I opened my eyes, I was in that cold, white room again, clutching the blankets with trembling hands.
How do you feel now, Mr. Clay?
You cried out, sir, as if...
A dream. The most awful, horrible nightmare I ever had.
A dream? The doctor will be very interested. Would you care to tell me all about it?
Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
It was about your former life?
Former life?
Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I meant... Here, where are you going?
To get my clothes, to get out of here. I won't stay here
another
minute.
But you can't go. You can't, Martin. Help me.
Please, oh, let go. Don't you realize that if I do stay here, if I dream that dream again... Listen. I was in a passageway. An endless, eternal passageway like a corridor of doom. It stretched on and on to infinity with doors, closed doors on either side. And on each one of the doors in alphabetical order, there was a name. The name of all those who had died since the beginning of time. I was walking down that corridor on my bare feet and... Why? Why are you looking at me that way?
You mustn't talk about that. You mustn't, do you hear?
But you asked me...
You didn't dream that dream. You couldn't have. And you've got to get it out of your mind. We'll help you. We'll give you a massage. That should make you relax. The alcohol, Martin, right over there.
A massage? You think that'll help?
If it doesn't, we'll call Dr. Stone. Try something else. Martin.
I see. Now what? What are you staring at?
Your feet.
On the soles. Dust. Thick, gray dust.
Dust. Like the dust in the passage. The corridor of doom. And that means... It wasn't a dream. It means... I was really there.
Dirty feet on those nice, clean sheets. No wonder our friend the nurse seemed so upset. Or was that the reason? Maybe she was just disappointed that he still hadn't told her about his operation. Yes, that always has them in stitches. Great big stitches, like the ones they take in a shroud.
Mr. Host, I'm afraid I just can't believe this story. I can't believe that it really happened.
Is that so, Mary? You think Mr. Clay got that gray dust in his feet because he has feet of clay?
There you go again, always looking on the discouraging side of things. I really do believe I'd rather talk to cheerful folk, like those nice young men and women who sang that new Lipton tea song when I was at the studio. Sing a song of Lipton's. Yes, that's the way people ought to feel about tea. Because, you know, when you're feeling discouraged or tired, there's nothing quite like that brisk flavor of Lipton tea to perk you up. Yes, brisk means that Lipton's is never wishy-washy. No, no, no siree, as they say in the song. So when you've had a busy afternoon, or maybe when friends drop in for a little talk, pour yourself a cup of cheer with brisk-flavored Lipton tea. It's got a special flavor that always tastes like home. And it always tastes like more, too.
Well, now I think it's about time to take another little walk. Yes, down the corridor of doom with our star, Boris Karloff. And by the way, don't be concerned about getting too tired, because you'll only have to walk one way. That's the nice part of a trip like that. You don't have to worry about coming back.
I lay there, staring down at my feet. No, it had not been a dream. For there, on my feet, was the thick, heavy dust from the corridor of doom. I had been there, walking down its awful silence, not in my mind, but in the flesh. My heart clenched like an icy fist, that I threw the blankets aside, started to get up.
Mr. Clay, what are you doing? Where are you going?
Let me go.
But you can't get up. You can't leave.
Oh, let me go.
Martin, quick, help me.
Please, Mr. Clay. Oh, for heaven's sake, let me go. Don't you realize what this means? If it wasn't a dream, and if I stay here, go down to that horrible place
We've
again.
We've got to make him quiet down. Some more of that medicine, Martin. Oh. Another 10 cc.
Right.
Oh, no more of that. It's
here, Mr. Clay.
You must take it. You must. It will make you sleep. Sleep so soundly that you won't be able to go down there again.
No, but...
All right. Give it to me.
Here. You stay here, Martin. I'll go get Dr. Stone and tell him.
Better, Mr. Clay? I don't know. Color. Dark red. Taste. It's like...
Yes, I know. And he makes me sleepy.
My eyes get heavy and... Have you been here for a long time, Martin?
No, not long.
What is it like outside of this room?
It's strange. Like no place else.
And the other patients, what are they like?
They're strange, too.
Listen, Martin... I'm a rich man. You're the only friend I've got here. You've got to help me.
Whether you're rich or poor doesn't matter. As for helping you, that's what I'm here for.
You've got to stay here. Watch me. Every minute. My heart. I don't think it'll stand much more. My first sensation was one of cold, numbing cold, creeping up my limbs. I reached for the blankets, couldn't find them. Then I opened my eyes, and I was there again, back there in that awful endless passage, that corridor of doom. The same stone wall, stone floor, covered with a thick layer of dust. The same doors with a name on each one, on both sides of me. But now... Now I was up to the bees. That one there, Barber, next to it, Babbitt, and then Backer. I tried to cry out, but I couldn't utter a sound. I tried to stop, check myself. My muscles didn't respond. Slowly, heavily, I continued walking on down that endless passage. Past Badger, Baffin, Bagley, past the bees and towards the seas. Towards a door... with my name on it. My heart pulsed, pounding with terror. My breath rasped in my throat. Convulsively, I clutched at the walls, forced myself completely around. Then, as if I were fighting against a roaring gale, I drove myself back. One step I took, two, three, and I stumbled and was falling again. Falling through darkness. Complete, absolute, unending. Even before I opened my eyes, I knew where I was. Back in my room, the sheets crumpled in my sweating hands. I lay there for a moment. I knew that this was my last chance. Slipped out of bed, tiptoed to the door of the room, opened it a crack and peered out to hospital corridor. And sitting at a desk halfway down it, the nurse. Could I slip past her? Then on a table next to the door, I saw the telephone. A telephone! Now I could get help. Reach someone who would save me, take me out of this place.
Picking it up quietly, I dialed my daughter's number, Alec Bartlett's wife.
Hello?
Jane? Oh, thank heaven.
Hello?
Jane, it's your father. Listen, you've got to help me. You've got to come and get me. I'm at the hospital. Alec
Hello?
Knows where.
Hello, is anyone there?
Yes, can't you hear me? Didn't you hear what I said? It's your father and... Jane! Hung up. I heard her, but she couldn't hear me. Something wrong with the phone, her phone. I've got to get hold of somebody. Somebody, but who? Dr. Rogers? Oh, might be out. And if they come in while I'm phoning... Oh, I know, of course.
Police headquarters, Ryan speaking.
Hello, police. This is John Clay of Riverside Road. I'm at the hospital. I don't know where.
Hello?
Can't you hear me, officer? For heaven's sake, listen. It's a matter of life and death. John Clay at a hospital. My son-in-law, Alec Bartlett, can tell you where.
Hello?
Officer, listen. Don't hang up.
Oh, nuts.
Officer, hello.
Anything the matter, Mr. Clay?
Dr. Stone, your telephone, there's something wrong with it.
No, Mr. Clay, there's nothing wrong. Not with the telephone.
But I tried to make two calls. Two different numbers and...
I know. And you should have known. Nurse, Ollerley.
Should have known what? Why couldn't they hear me when I could hear them? Why?
Yes, Dr. Stone.
Will you put Mr. Clay back into bed?
No.
I'm awfully sorry, sir. I only went out for a minute.
No.
Come on, Mr. Clay,
No,
please.
Leave me alone, please.
Mr.
Let
Clay,
go.
Please.
No use struggling. You know that, don't you?
Yes. I know. Doctor, I won't have to go back down there again, will I? Down to the corridor?
That's not up to me. All right, nurse. I think we're ready for another dose. The final one.
Yes, doctor.
No, doctor. No, not that red medicine. Not again.
I'm sorry, but you've had a lot of time. All the time we can give you.
All right, Mr. Clay.
No, I won't take it. You know what it means, doctor. If I go back down there again to the corridor, it'll be to the letter C. To the place where my name is.
If he won't take it by himself, perhaps you'd better help her, Martin.
Yes, sir.
No, Mr. Clay. I won't. Again, I knew where I was before I opened my eyes. I could feel the dust under my bare feet, and through the dust, the biting chill of the cold stones. I was there, back in the corridor, walking down its silent length past the blank, closed doors. But the names on the doors, now they were all C's. Cabot, Cadden, Cahoon. On I walked, the beating of my heart, the pounding of my pulse loud in my ears. On down the passage, no longer even trying to fight against what I knew was inevitable. On past Cameron, Chelsea, Chiswick, and then, suddenly, terribly, one door. A door with my name on it, gaping, waiting for me. I tried to stop to turn, but my legs carried me forward. I was but two doors away. I could see into it now, see that it contained nothing. Absolutely nothing, not even a coffin. Just stone walls and a flat stone slab. I was turning to step over the threshold. I made a last convulsive effort. Merciful heavens, help me! Save me!
All right, Martin. Pick him up.
Yes, sir. Is it all over?
Hello, Bartlett. In at the death, eh? I'll see if there's any pulse, of course, but... I should think it is all over.
It is, Stone, but not the way you think.
What? Clay! He's not dead. No thanks to you. All right, get him up, both of you. Here, Mr. Clay, let me help you.
It's all right, Martin. I'll be fine from now on.
But how...
Don't look so surprised, Alec. Mr. Martin is a detective. I hired him some time ago. You see, I had a feeling that something was wrong when that railing broke accidentally, and I took that bad fall. So I decided I should investigate.
You can't prove it. You can't prove anything.
The first results of Martin's investigation showed me what bad financial shape you were in. And it was then that I realized that you had actually been trying to murder me to get hold of my money. So I faked that story of having a very bad heart.
You mean it?
I thought it would give you the idea of trying something more subtle and less dangerous. And it certainly did.
But you still can't prove anything, not a thing.
No, don't you worry about that. Don't forget. Come back here, Bartlett.
You'll never have a chance to prove it.
Come back, Bartlett.
Oh, you shot him, killed him.
Well, I couldn't have. I fired up in the air to get him to stop.
Come on.
I don't understand it. There's got a mark on him. But he is dead.
He was the one who had the bad heart. That's what gave me the idea of pretend. Good heavens, look.
At what?
This hallway was supposed to be the corridor of doom. When I reached the door with my name on it, I was supposed to die. Look. Look at the name on that door there. The one right next to him.
Bartlett. His name. So what?
Nothing, Martin. Nothing at all.
Now, where do you think old Dr. Stone got the idea for that little alphabetical graveyard? That's right, for me. Huh? You don't believe me? Then come on home with me tonight and I'll show you the one in the cellar of my house. What's more, I'll show you a door and a neat stone slab with your name on it.
Nonsense, Mr. Host. Mr. Clay just explained that the whole thing was a hoax. And I'm not going to sit here and hear you say otherwise.
Well, then don't sit. Stand up and we'll take a walk, Mary Bennett. Yes, back to your name. Back to the bees. Baker Bartlett Bennett.
You don't scare me.
Yeah? Well, how would you like it if we went to the L's and found a door marked Lipton?
Oh, why, that's fine. Inside, we'd find a wonderful, friendly beverage, Lipton's, the tea with the brisk flavor. The tea that's welcome at all hours of the day. Yes, the largest selling brand of tea in the whole world, Lipton tea.
And now a word of advice. If you should wake up tonight with a sudden chill, find yourself walking barefoot down a dusty stone corridor with doors on both sides of it, don't get excited. Just insist on a doom with a view. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is The Whistling Legs by Roman McDougall. Yes, and next week's Inner Sanctum story, directed by Hyman Brown, and brought to you by Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup. Next week's story is about women. Yes, two women who like to be treated rough. Choke them to death, shoot them, murder them. They'll love you for it. And who do you think is going to be their boyfriend? That's right. Boris Karloff. Boris Karloff will be with us again next week because who else could love such women? So, if you're in a tender mood, tune in next Tuesday. Until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
It's wonderful how quick and easy cooking can be these days. I guess some of you remember when it used to take half a day to make a pot of chicken noodle soup. But now we have Lipton's Noodle Soup Mix. You might say Lipton's takes no time at all to prepare, and yet it has a fresh cooked chickeny taste, a real old-fashioned homemade flavor. Yes, and it's brimful of tender golden egg noodles. Lipton's is grand for quick meals, and it's also a perfect beginning for the most elaborate dinner. So don't forget to serve Lipton's Noodle Soup. And don't forget to tune in next Tuesday night for another Inner Sanctum Mystery.
COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. Call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier. Enjoy. Enjoy.